जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरत श्री श्रीमदिश्वाइंग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 20। चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड प्योर डिवोशनल सर्विस। वर्स नंबर 29। प्रोक्तेन भक्ति योगेन भजतो मास कृन्मुनेः कामा हृदया नश्यन्ति सर्वे मयि हृदि स्थिते। प्रोक्तेन भक्ति योगेन भजतो मास कृन्मुनेः कामा हृदया नश्यन्ति सर्वे मयि हृदि स्थिते। प्रोक्तेन भक्तियोगेन भजतो मास कृन्मुनेः कामा हृदया नश्यन्ति सर्वे मयि हृदि स्थिते। प्रोक्तेन भक्ति योगे भजतो मास कृन्मुने आमादैया नश्यन्ति सर्वे मयि हृदि स्थिते। मतीस प्रोक्तेन विच हैज बीन डिस्क्राइब्ड Bhakti Yogena by devotional service. Bhajataha, who is worshipping? Ma, me, asakrit, constantly. Munehe, of the sage. Kama, material desires. Hridaya, in the heart. Nashyanti, are destroyed. Sarve, all of them. Mai, in me. Hridi, when the heart. Sthite, is firmly situated. Translation purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. When an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through loving devotional service as described by me, his heart becomes firmly situated in me. Thus all material desires within the heart are destroyed. Purport. The material senses are engaged in gratifying the concoctions of the mind, causing many types of material desires to become prominent, one after another. One who constantly engages in the devotional service of the Lord by hearing and chanting the Lord's transcendental glories with firm faith gets relief from the harassment of material desires. By serving the Lord, one becomes strengthened in the conviction that Sri Krishna is the only actual enjoyer, and all others are meant to share the Lord's pleasure through devotional service. A devotee of the Lord situates Sri Krishna on a beautiful throne within his heart, and there offers the Lord constant service. Just as the rising sun gradually eliminates all trace of darkness, the Lord's presence within the heart causes all material desires there to weaken and eventually disappear. The words "Mai Hridisthite," when the heart is situated in me, indicate that an advanced devotee sees Lord Krishna not only within his own heart, but within the hearts of all living creatures. Thus, a sincere devotee who chants and hears the glories of Sri Krishna should not be discouraged by the remnants of material desires within the heart. He should faithfully wait for the devotional process to naturally purify the heart of all contaminations. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So before I begin, I would like to request the blessings of all the devotees present here. So we are continuing the section of Uddhav Gita from the 11th canto. We call it Uddhav Gita because it was spoken to Uddhava. Whereas the Gita spoken to Arjuna, we call it Bhagavad Gita. So the name, the title is given based on not necessarily the speaker all the time, but even the receiver. So Bhagavad Gita, actually Uddhav Gita is also, from one point of view, it is Bhagavad Gita. It is spoken by Krishna, the Supreme Lord. But it is known as Uddhava, based on the receiver. And we know how we have been doing this section for a long time, for several chapters, starting from chapter 6 of the 11th canto till 29 or 30th of the 11th canto, the section of Uddhava Gita. So it is larger than the Gita, more than 1,000 verses compared to 700 verses of the Gita, Bhagavad Gita. And both of them, interestingly, focus on pure devotional service, pure bhakti yoga. But because the Bhagavad Gita was spoken in the battlefield, Krishna could not elaborate much. It was a tense moment, tense situation. So there he couldn't elaborate on much details of certain points. Whereas in Uddhava Gita, he is more relaxed from one point of view. Although it is a distressful situation because Krishna is about to leave the material world, go back to the spiritual world. But he has all the time to discuss in greater detail the points he wants to share with the world. And Uddhava becomes an instrument to the medium through which the knowledge is dissipated. So in this way we have Uddhav Gita elaborating on several topics that has been already been described in the Gita. For example, we find the three modes in detailed discussion in the Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Uddhav Gita. There is also the section of mind in great detail in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and in Uddhav Gita also we find several verses describing the nature of the mind. But in the Bhagavad Gita you don't find any stories. Krishna doesn't elaborate the principles based on any narrations of stories. Whereas in the Uddhav Gita you find he narrates the story of several stories. The story of Avadhuta Brahman, the story of Avanti Brahmana, Pingala the prostitute. All these sections are there in the Uddhav Gita. So we will discuss a few verses here. The purport says a couple of statements on the nature of the mind and how the impurities seated within the mind and the heart are eventually cleared by the grace of the Lord for a devotee who renders pure devotional service. These anarthas can cause several setbacks during the practice of our devotional life. But by the grace of Krishna, these anarthas are gradually eliminated. And eventually a person becomes a pure devotee. So in order to describe the nature of the mind, Krishna narrates a story of Avanti Brahmana. So there a couple of verses talk in detail about the nature of the mind. One verse, even in the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, you find Krishna talking about the nature of the mind. In the sixth chapter, we find these verses. Uddhare atmanatmanam, natmanam avasadayet. Atmai vahyatmano bandhur, atmai varipuratma. So here the word atma comes six times. Six times Krishna uses the word atma. And all the words doesn't, all the references to atma doesn't necessarily indicate the spirit soul. Uddhare atmanatmanam, he says, elevate the atma, the spirit soul, using the atma, the mind. Raise the consciousness, raise the quality of the mind, quality of the spirit soul, using the mind. Natmanam avasadayi. Do not degrade yourself using the mind. Atmaiva hyatmano bandhur, atmaiva ripuratma. The mind can be your best friend or the greatest enemy. So therefore, the mind plays a central role in the liberation of the soul and in the bondage of the soul. How we use the mind, how we utilize the mind, decides whether we are elevating ourselves or degrading ourselves. So therefore, Prabhupada uses, whenever he translates any verse, he doesn't give a literal translation, like many linguistic scholars do the translation. He prefers to translate in a way that gives out the essential meaning of the verse. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita gives an example. If a linguist, for example, an English scholar, he wants to translate, say, a medical book or a book on some medical science, allopathy. Now, simply by knowing the language of English doesn't necessarily mean he is qualified to translate. Right? He may translate literally, but whether a practitioner can refer to that book authoritatively is a big question. Whereas, there could be another person who is a recognized medical doctor, practitioner. He may not be expert in the language of English. But because he knows the science, his translation of the book will be more authoritative. Because he knows the essence of the subject. So referring to such a book is more beneficial than the literally accurate translation of the book. right? Similarly, whenever we have to refer to translation of scriptures, we shouldn't go by literal accuracy. We need to go through, we need to refer to the translation of those authors who have been practicing the principles in their life and applying the principles in their life. Otherwise, it is like, as Sanatana Goswami says, Avaishnava Mukhodgirnam Putam Harikathamritam. Such a reading will have a poisonous effect on our consciousness. Like the milk touched by the lips of a serpent. So these scholars who may be translating these books may not be necessarily devoted to Krishna, may not be necessarily practicing devotional service to Krishna. Their loyalty is only to the language and the scholarly content present in it. But Krishna says in the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, he says, unless you are a devotee and friend of mine, you cannot penetrate into the mystery of the Gita. And we have the example of the South Indian Brahman. When Lord Chaitanya traveled to the South, he met that devotee who had no understanding of the Sanskrit language, but he had captured the main essence of the Gita. And Mahaprabhu appreciated his devotion to Krishna, although he had no understanding of the language. Similarly, we need to refer to devotional interpretations, devotional translations of scriptures. Otherwise, we fall into a big trap. So here, in the Uddhava Gita, we find this verse from the Avanti Brahmana section. He says, Nayam janome sukha-dukha heto na devatatma graha karma kalaha manaparam karana mamananti samsara chakram parivartayedhya. So he, Avanti Brahman, if to give you a background of the story of Avanti Brahmana, he was a very wealthy person who had accumulated a lot of wealth and a lot of influences, influential contacts. For some reason, by the time he grew old, he lost everything. He lost all his money, he lost all his contacts. His friends deserted him, relatives abandoned him, and there was no one surrounding him. And in that situation, he goes into introspective mood. And he starts wondering, why did I land up in such a trouble? What is the cause of my current misery? And in deep introspection, he realizes that the main cause of his problem is the mind, his own mind. Manaparam karanamamananti. So he says, Nayam janome sukha dukha heto. My cause for sukha and dukha is not these people surrounding me, running around me. Na devatatma, nor the demigods, because many times we say ultimately everything is caused by higher authorities. No, all this Shani, Graha, Rahu and so many planetary influences, they have an influence upon my life and my sukha dukha. Na devatatma, atma here is refers to the body. Nor my body is the cause of my sukha and dukha. Graha karma kala, graha, again the planetary influences. Astrological chart and all those factors. Nor are that the cause of my suffering. Karma. Nor is my karma the ultimate cause of my suffering. Because every action is a reaction, and we understand how by causing creating negative actions, we receive negative reactions. So that also can be a factor for a person's happiness and distress. But ultimately, even that is not the cause. This Brahmana says, na graha karma kala, nor the time factor. Sometimes we say this, oh, this is a bad time in my life, bad phases of my life, then there a good phase will come up eventually after some time. Nor the time factor is ultimately responsible for my happiness and distress, according to this Brahmana. Manaparam karanamamananti. Mind ultimately determines whether a person is happy or unhappy in a given situation. Even in the best possible luxurious situation, a person can be miserable And in the worst condition of material life also someone can be happy and peaceful. So mind is the factor, according to this person, that determines whether one is enjoying life or suffering in life. Samsara chakram parivartayedya. And the mind is the cause of a person's continuous rotation in the cycle of birth and death. So therefore, we need to understand how mind can play such a devil's role in making our life such a miserable condition. And there was this book written by one author, Rhonda Byrne. The name of the book is Secret. One BTG article was written based on this book. There the author says, how you think decides what you attract using the universe's subtle and gross laws. So if you're always thinking that, say, I want to become wealthy, for example. I want to become a millionaire. So simply deeply think about it. And eventually the universe's laws, several laws, will work in such a favorable manner that you will automatically become wealthy. And similarly, if you are negatively thinking, oh, this, whether this calamity will happen, whether it will happen, and if you're constantly anxious about a miserable situation, then similarly the laws, the universe will act in such a way that that thing will happen. So in that video about the release of the book, it says, it shows a young lady who's entered into a jewelry shop, and she's dreaming to get a diamond necklace. And she's dreaming, meditating. And the next scene shows her husband or boyfriend comes and puts the necklace on her neck. And then another person is dreaming to get a BMW car. And he's dreaming sitting in a chair and meditating. The next scene shows he's driving the BMW. And the flip side, it shows a person is having a motorbike and he's anxious that it may get stolen. So he parks at a place, ties the bike on a chain, on a pole, and is worried whether it will remain safe or not. After a few hours he comes back, the bike is stolen. In this way, it says the mind ultimately decides what you think and meditate upon will attract those kind of forces and cause that event to happen out of your control. So all you have to do is dream. Just dream what you want to become, what you want to achieve. And that is going to happen. Of course, we don't subscribe to this philosophy. We understand there are so many other factors involved in accomplishing an action. As the Bhagavad Gita says, there are five factors that determine the completion of an action. Adhishthanam, Tathakarta, Karanam, Chaprathagvidam, Vividhascha Prathak Cheshta, Daivam Chaivatra Panchamam. Adhishthanam, the place of action. Karta, the doer of the action. Karanam cha prathagvidam, the various instruments you use in order to employ the task. Karanam cha prathagvidam. The various endeavors we employ, the various efforts you put in order to accomplish the action. And finally, the most important factor is Daivam Chaivatra Panchamam. There are some superior supernatural causes, supernatural controllers within the universe. Ultimately, the Supreme Lord Himself, who decide whether you are able to fulfill a task successfully or not. All these factors have to be taken into consideration. Not just our ability to daydream. That is not enough. Because so many people dream so many things, more intensely than our meditation on Hare Krishna. But not everyone achieves the purpose, achieves their goal. So therefore, we understand how the mind plays a central role In the Gita also Krishna says, what you think throughout your life, those thoughts will affect your thought at the time of death, which will decide your next life. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tijatyante. So if we are absorbed in a certain thought throughout our life, those thoughts are going to dominate our thought at the time of death, and that will decide our next life. So yes, so in that sense, thoughts determine our next life. But thoughts alone don't determine our quality of life while we are living in this world. So it is said, mind cannot determine reality, but mind can decide how we are affected by the reality. So many situations we encounter in this world while we are living here. Happy situations and miserable situations, comfortable situations. But whether we become miserable in those situations or whether we delight in those situations, that is determined by the nature of the mind. As it is said, misery is inevitable, suffering is optional. Everyone has to undergo a certain amount of misery and comforts in their life. But whether we suffer in those situations, that is decided by our nature of the mind. Even in the most miserable situation, someone can remain happy, and vice versa also. So therefore, mind in that sense doesn't exactly determine what is going to happen, but how we take those situations, respond to those situations, whether we are miserable or happy, that is determined by the mind. So therefore, we need to cultivate, we need to work upon the mind in order to be happy in all situations. Therefore, both the Gitas discuss the nature of the mind to a large extent, and therefore we try to study them. Like for example, if I am planning a trip to some place, say for example I want to go into yatra, and if for some reason I fall sick or my boss doesn't allow me to go, I don't get enough leave, then usually we become miserable. I had planned so many things, so much expenses I have paid, and I could have enjoyed with my family. All those things are spoiled in a moment, just by one sickness or one by accident, whatever, some calamity may come. And we can go into a miserable state of existence. Even in relationships, we expect certain things from the other person. And if the other person doesn't meet our expectations, we start becoming miserable. If our mind is decided to control the person, and if the other person doesn't change based on our controlling desires, then we become miserable. But if we turn into the mode of acceptance, everyone is having a certain nature, everyone is having a certain style, habit. If we get into that acceptance mode, then we become happy. So all these tricks are played by the mind. And therefore the mind needs to be programmed. Therefore we need to have a kind of fences or boundaries within our relationships. Whom to control, how much to control. Especially when there are children, we want to control them and children obey us. But eventually when they grow beyond a certain age, the children don't listen to the parents. And then the parents become miserable. He was such a nice boy, nice student, but now they are not listening to me. They have their own minds. We have our own minds. And when two minds clash, that is going to create a conflict. So when to advise, how much to advise, all these things we need to calculate and understand, respect each other's private space and accordingly maintain a distance, safe distance. So in the next verse, Avanti Brahman says, Mano gunanvai srijate valiyas tatascha karmani vilakshanani shuklani krishna nyathalohitani tebhyasya varna srutayo bhavanti. He says, Manogunanvai srijate baliyan. The mind is determined by is influenced by the three modes. Gunan. And Gunan is the three modes. And Srijate Baliya. Baliyam is extremely strong and powerful. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chanchalam, Arjuna says, Chanchalam himana Krishna pramathi balavadridham. Chanchal mind is always flickering. Pramathi, stubborn, dridham, obstinate. Tasyaham nigraham anye vayori vasudushkaram. I can control the wind, the raging wind, but I find it difficult to control the mind. That's how powerful the mind is. So here also he says, Mano baliya, mind is extremely strong. Tatascha karmani vilakshanani. Shuklani krishnani athalohitani. The mind is influenced by three modes. Shuklani. Generally we give three colors to the mind, like red, blue and white. Like we have three colors of in a television screen. Three colors mix up together and produce all these multiple colors. Similarly, these three modes combine together to form so many different combinations. So here Krishna says the three primary colors or primary modes. Shuklani refers to white, mode of goodness. Krishnani is mode of, it is black here, but it is mode of darkness, mode of ignorance. And Athalohitani, Lohita is reddish, iron. So mode of passion is represented by the red color. Ignorance is represented by black and goodness is represented by white. In another cases, they use these three colors. Goodness, white for goodness, red for passion and blue for ignorance. Either way, the combinations, these permutations and combinations decide, influence our minds. And based on the influences, we have so many minds. Everyone has his own mind. And these influence combination of the modes decide how a person has, what kind of outlook a person has about the world, about the people around him, about the situations in life. In this way, the three modes play a central role. So just like we saw, we use this in our Gita course, a sketch that shows an old woman from one angle, and from another angle, the same sketch shows a young woman. Now, someone sees an old woman, someone sees a young woman, but the other person cannot see the other situation. Each person is able to see only one. So what we see, the sketch is the same, and it is front of everyone, but some people can see only one angle of vision, the other person can see only the other angle of vision. What we see in life, what we perceive in life is determined by the influence of the modes. Now one person may say, "Are, can't you see that? It is so simple. It is just look at this angle, this in this direction. So clearly visible." But it doesn't happen like that. Even in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto, we find Shukadeva Goswami describing the structure of the universe. He talks about a golden Mount Meru. And then the ocean of liquor, ocean of sugar cane juice, ocean of yogurt and milk. And our modern scientists have used all that high technology, telescopes and other instruments. But they are not visible at all. The 14 planetary systems and the Brahma Loka, Indra Loka, Swarga. All these fantastic descriptions are given in the Bhagavatam. And none of the observations made by our scientists match with these descriptions. Hardly any of them match. Except the Sun, Moon, Mars and Jupiter, these kind of planets are there, the close planets. But the entire structure of the universe so differs so much from what we study in modern astronomy. So the universe is the same for all to see. But when someone looks at the universe with the idea of controlling the universe, you see the universe in a particular form, particular fashion. And when someone like Shukadeva Goswami sees the same universe, when our Acharya sees the same universe, they are seeing not as an object of enjoyment, but how it is a wonderful creation of Krishna, how this can be utilized in Krishna's service, how the material universe is designed for liberating the conditioned living entities out of the cycle of birth and death.
So when this is the mode in which we are looking at the universe, then we see it in a totally different angle. So when someone is conditioned by the three modes in order to enjoy the world, they see totally different thing. And someone doesn't want to enjoy the mode, someone who is free from the influence of the three modes, like our acharyas, and then they have a totally different angle of vision. So therefore we need to have faith. When the Bhagavatam describes, Shukdev Goswami describes the universe in such and such fashion, and we need not try to see whether it matches with the description given in our astronomy books. They will never match, because the mode of looking at the perception is totally different. So in this way, there are different perceptions based on the influence of the three modes upon the minds of conditioned living entities. So when we tell someone, if someone, say for example, there are two people staying together. One person is too much cleanliness conscious. He can't tolerate any dirt here and there. Everything has to be spick and span. And the other person is like, theek hai, sab thoda mota idhar chalta hai. Not a big issue. So this person gets up early in the morning and sees everything is in a mess. And he starts shouting at the other person, don't you understand, don't you have even the basic standards of cleanliness? So in this way the argument begins. But the other person is conditioned, he doesn't see it as unclean. This is normal. Whereas this person cannot tolerate even the slightest dirt. And we tell, this person tells him, "Arre, you just have to clean this, wash your clothes and have a broom here, mop it here. Don't you understand this much?" So the perception, now it is not easy. It's not, you can just tell, just clean it and just change your thinking, start thinking like this. It doesn't work like that, because the modes have already programmed the person in such a fashion. And Chaitanya Charitamrita book is the example of, suppose there is a bathroom and the sink is there, the taps are in one place. So when you open the tap and the bathroom is full of water, the water flows in a certain direction towards the drain. And if you want the water to flow in the other direction, you have to physically manually do it. But again, the natural flow is towards the drain. That's how the floor is designed, the slope is designed. So similarly, we can't just think, oh, the water should flow in this direction. Simply by thinking, the water won't change the direction of flow. Similarly, a person is programmed. The default setting in a person's mind and intelligence is programmed by the modes to think in a certain fashion. And we can't just tell the person, oh, why don't you think like this? Change your thinking, change your style. But the water is designed to flow like this for that person. Sometimes we find, you know, or when you use the cell phones to type a text, you know, auto correction features are there. And whenever I type Hare Krishna, it says hate Krishna. You're trying to love Krishna and it says hate Krishna. So then I have to change manually. And T has to be changed to R. So these are default settings. And if you want to change the default settings, then maybe you have to format the device, factory set, install again the factory settings. Those kind of changes have to be done. Then it starts behaving the way we want it to behave. So similarly, we need to understand the nature of the mind, the basic, the way the modes are influencing us. That has to be changed. And that comes by the practice of serious sadhana, serious spiritual practices. The practices that we undergo in the Abhideya process, Bhakti Yoga, is all about changing these fundamental settings of the mind. That's how gradually and slowly our character evolves. Not overnight. It takes years together to change the settings. And eventually, after a prolonged period of time, the person's character changes and transforms. So, Shivaram Swami in his book describes the nature of a devotee who is situated at the unsteady practice of devotional service. So we have these stages, Adho Shraddha, Sadhu Sangh, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, then Nishtha. Right? So Nishtha is a stage of steadiness. Before steadiness, it's unsteadiness. Bhajana Kriya and Sadhu Sangh, that stage is unsteady practice of devotional service. So what are the characteristics? He describes the characteristics of a person who is on that stage of unsteady practice. So we are filled with anarthas. Most of us will admit that we have a lot of anarthas and our practice is unsteady. Unsteady means we can't steadily focus our mind on the holy name, focus our mind on Krishna, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's characteristics. It is interrupted by several sensual thoughts, materialistic thoughts. There is no constant, steady flow of thought towards Krishna, favorable thoughts of Krishna. Even while we are practicing direct devotional life of chanting Hare Krishna, even then our thoughts are interrupted by sensual thoughts. What to speak of other times when we are not directly engaged throughout the day. So he says there are four types of anarthas basically. Offenses or aparad, material desires, asat trishna, weakness of heart, hridaya daurbalyam, and misunderstanding of spiritual truths, tattva vibhrama. And each of these four have four subdivisions. So aparad has four types. Offenses to the holy name, nama aparad, seva aparad, DT aparad, and not seva aparad, sorry. Nama aparad, DT aparad, Vaishnava aparad, and aparad towards other living entities, in general living entities. All these are offenses. And these offenses are anarthas within the heart. All these anarthas cause a certain bad habit in our life. Every anartha has a corresponding bad habit that is reflected in our behavior. Next he says, next type of anartha is material desires, which are of four types. Desire for material objects, for heavenly comforts, for mystic yogic siddhis, and for liberation, moksha kam. All these are material desires. Then similarly, weakness of heart has four divisions. The desire for fame is a weakness of heart. Deceitfulness or fault finding is weakness. Attachment, envy towards other living entities, anyone, is also a weakness. And attachment to objects that are unrelated to Krishna. Any attachment to objects unrelated to Krishna. All these four are material desires. And tattva vibhrama is again four types. Misunderstanding one's own identity. Identity as spirit soul, if that is misunderstood, misidentifying with the body, that is a tattva vibhrama, an unclear understanding of the philosophy. And misunderstanding the position of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, considering him to be an ordinary person or even an extraordinary person, that is tattva vibhrama. Misunderstanding about the process of devotional service, how to practice the process, if that is not clear, that is tattva vibhrama. And misunderstandings related to subjects that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. If we can't make out what are unfavorable things and favorable things for our practice, that is a serious misunderstanding, which is an anartha, which will cause a bad habit in our behavior. So all these anarthas give rise to six enemies within the mind. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, envy. Kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, madamatsar. These are the enemies that are born of these anarthas. And these enemies cause six waves in us. Distress, illusion, hunger, thirst, old age and death. Six waves of distress. So how to get rid of these? Therefore in the Bhagavatam we find this verse. Apanna samsmrutim ghoram yannama vivashogrunan tatasadhyo vimuchyeta yad bibheti swayam bhayam. Simply by chanting one name of Krishna, yannama vivashogrunan, Simply by chanting one name of Krishna, all these enemies can be destroyed instantaneously. Chakravarti Thakur gives more elaboration on in his Madhurya Kadambini. He says, how we can get rid of these anarthas? He gives a technical name for each stage of clearance of these anarthas. He says that only one of the many anarthas in the heart is nullified. Out of so many thousands of anarthas, one is nullified. He calls it the stage of Ekadesha Vartini. One is gone. When many unwanted habits are gone, he calls it Bahudesha Vartini. Many anarthas are destroyed. When almost every anartha is destroyed, it is called Prayiki. And when all anarthas are destroyed, it is called Purna. But still, when every anartha is gone, so even Purna is not a safe stage, because there is a chance of recurrence. So Purna is not exactly perfection. When every anartha is gone, and there is no chance of coming back, he calls it Atyantiki Anartha Nivritti. So basically the anarthas, one common element of all anartha is that I am too absorbed in the thoughts of I and mine. Aham Mameti. There is a common feature of all anarthas. So as anartha nivritti happens gradually, this possessiveness about I and mine gradually reduces. There is a whole science behind anartha nivritti. Just like you, we in an industrial process, we have so many purification processes. Say gold has to be purified, or in copper has to be purified. It has to go through a series of procedures. Heating and chemical application. Eventually, after several stages, you find pure gold or pure copper, pure metal. Similarly, if we consider our heart as that metal that has to be purified, it has to go through all these stages. And eventually, finally, we get pure gold, pure butter-like heart, which Krishna can steal. So how to go about this? He says, first is association of devotees. There is a fundamental primary step one has to employ. In the association of pure devotees, the neophyte practitioner gets the enthusiasm to seriously practice devotional life. And then what exactly association should lead to serious vows, initiation. One should commit oneself to the process and in this way seriously practice our practices. And then he says, what is the root cause of all these anarthas? How these anarthas come up? He gives several reasons, several causes, but one main cause he highlights is inattentive chanting. Inattentive chanting is the root of all these anarthas taking birth within the heart. And Haridas Thakur also says, Nishiddha char kuti nati jiva himsa labha puja pratishthadi yata upashakha. These are the upashakhas or the weeds that come up because of careless chanting. So chanting or unsteady devotional practices is supposed to clear away anarthas. But if our chanting is inattentive, the rate at which new anarthas are born is more than the rate at which anarthas are cleared. So ideally the clearance should be more than generation. But inattentive chanting or inattentive practices causes generation to be a faster rate than the clearance. In this way, the anartha start, the weeds start choking the devotional creeper, the Bhakti Lata Beej. And eventually at a certain time the creeper is completely choked and the devotee then leaves the practice of Krishna consciousness. So we need to be careful. Is our practice really serious, attentive? In this way, he says how the stages, he gives the stages of eradication of anarthas. He says unsteady devotion is important to eradicate most of the anarthas that spring from nama parad. So some bare minimum offenses can be cleared using unstudied devotional services. Namaparad will generate more. Steady devotion, however, when a devotee reaches a stage of nishtha, then steady devotion removes most of the anarthas, except a few. When the devotee reaches a stage of bhava or ecstasy, then most of the things are removed except those caused by offense to the great Vaishnavas. Otherwise, all anarthas are removed by at bhava stage. And only when, even at the prema stage, there is some chance of recurrence. Only when the devotee eliminates everything and goes back to the spiritual world, that's the only safest stage where there is no chance of anarthas coming back. So the whole focus is on how we need to be so diligent and careful about our practices. Careless practice, inattentive practices will not give much result. It says, Bahu Janma Kareyadi, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bahu Janma Kareyadi, Shravana Kirtan, Tabutana Paya Krishna Pade Premadhan. Otherwise, we may go on chanting mechanically and do our practices mechanically, but the rate of clearance will be slow. But when we are serious and attentive, then the clearance is so rapid, so fast, that we start perceiving the results. And moving from unsteady to steady to and all those asakti, ruchi, these won't be just theoretical stages that we read in the books, but some stages that we can actually experience and realize them. So therefore, we need to be very attentive about our practice, and then we can be assured of actually enjoying, relishing pure Krishna Prem. So I'll stop here. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
थोड़ा प्रॉब्लम है प्यार का थाइस का